Welcome to the Better Birth Podcast. My name's Erin and I'm a hypnobirthing and antenatal instructor, birth activist and all-round birth geek. In this podcast, I chat to experts in the field of pregnancy and birth, debunking myths around birth, diving into the research around maternity care and exploring what is it that means you're more likely to have a positive birthing experience. If you enjoy this podcast, do feel free to buy me a coffee and fund my caffeine habit. Link to my Buy Me a Coffee page is in the podcast info. Enjoy this episode. Welcome to the Better Birth Podcast. This week, we are going to be covering quite an important topic, which I think is not discussed as much as it needs to be. But it is something that affects lots and lots of people who have given birth. So we're going to be talking about tears in birth and the recovery afterwards in postnatally. And I'm very happy to welcome my lovely friends, Abigail Latif, who is an independent midwife, and Beth Sutcliffe from the Mum Physio to talk about tears and recovery afterwards. Welcome, guys.
Hello.
Lovely to have you finally on the podcast. Abigail, you've been on before. Do you both want to introduce yourselves a little bit before we start?
So I go first. So hi everyone. My name's Abigail Latif, otherwise known as Maternal Matters. I'm an independent midwife of just over a year now. I was a previous NHS midwife of over 14 years. I'm a mum of three and I'm based in Manchester. I'm really enjoying working independently at the moment. And I also do lots of other things with my maternal mother. So, and I'm friends with Beth and we know each other from Manchester. So I'm really happy to share this day with her.
Thank you. Yes, so my name's Beth and I am formerly known as the Mum Physio. So I'm a women's pelvic health physiotherapist and I've been a physiotherapist for 9 years now, dipping in and out for pelvic health through the whole of that period. I set up my own business 2 years ago. So I've been working as the Mum Physio in Middleton for 2 years. So I absolutely love my job. I wouldn't do anything else. Love supporting women and the community of postnatal gynecology and obstetrics.
Well, welcome both of you. Like I said, I think this topic is something that really doesn't get discussed enough. And I know it's something that lots of people are absolutely terrified of as well, experiencing a tear during birth. So before we start talking about the recovery after a tear, do you want to just quickly just touch on what is a tear and the different types of tears that someone may experience when they're in labor?
Yeah, of course. I think one thing to absolutely stress, because you're exactly right, people are so anxious and nervous about tearing, is that a real reassuring thing is that the pelvic floor muscles can actually stretch up to 250 times their normal length before tearing. So that's actually really reassuring, because that is the biggest, you know, any muscle can lengthen in the whole of the body. So I must reassure people before the panic sets in for giving birth vaginally. But yeah, so just the types of muscle tears. So you've got the first degree, which is just skin only. Second degree is then entering the perineum. So that does impact on your perineal muscles. Then with third degrees, you've actually got some subcategories within that. So you've got your 3A, which is less than 50% of the external sphincter. Now I'm just going to explain what that means. So in the anus, you have an external and an internal sphincter muscles. So the external is something that we can control. So say, for example, you're trying to hold in a poo or you're in public, you need to let wind go and you think, oh my God, not yet. And they are really good at controlling those things. But the internal one is something that actually we can't control. So it's a bit like the muscles surrounding our organs and the heart. It's, you know, it works involuntarily. So the 3A is less than 50% of that external muscle. The 3B is more than 50% of that external muscle. And then a 3C is that internal sphincter torn as well, okay? And then moving on to type 4, that is when it goes from straight from the vagina into the anus, and that is both sphincters fully torn, which is obviously quite the biggest tear and has the biggest impact for ladies in recovery.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that I think is also quite important to stress is that a certain degree of tearing can be really normal during labour. And a lot of people recover very, very well from tears. And having experienced second degree tears myself, I can say from experience that it wasn't horrific recovering from a second degree tear and actually healed very, very quickly, much quicker actually than my episiotomy with my first, which I think is quite a common thing that people say as well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And 100%, I think the stats is like 90% of women during the first vaginal delivery will tear, and you're 100% right. First and second degrees, and even like, you know, 3As and 3Bs can heal really well. But yeah, episiotomies, because you're actually going into the muscle, that is a bit of a longer time of recovery, but we'll go on to that in a little bit.
So if somebody does experience a tear, Abigail, what's the kind of process when somebody experiences a tear during labour? What happens afterwards?
Yeah, so just also putting a midwife's perspective on tears is that it obviously depends what type of midwife you are as well and what kind of area that you would work in. But I specialised in home birth and birth centres, so I have seen a lot of tears in my career and lots of all of the classifications that Beth was talking about as well. But just to add, it is really rare that you would experience a third degree or, I've never seen a fourth degree at home or in a birth centre. So the birth environment can have a huge impact on the classification of the tear and also the type of birth that you experience. But we do know that, well, you know, I'm sure the stats are out there, I don't have them to hand, but what I'm seeing at the moment, because I still do a lot of postnatal care, is that I am seeing a rise in episiotomies. And there was a time during my career where I say that you wouldn't necessarily see that many. You might see more from a certain trust, because obviously there's a lot of trust in Greater Manchester, and we know that some have higher intervention rates than others. But now I'm seeing them a lot, and that's because we know that birth centres are closing and home births are restricted. So for me now, going into these postnatal visits, and I can do up to 10 visits per day, it's now rare for me to not see anybody with a tear or an episiotomy. So just to add that. So we know that because the rates of interventions are rising, so therefore the tears and episiotomies are as well. I forgot any question now. So
no, but it's interesting, isn't it? I think it's really important to note that you are less likely to experience a tear in a birth centre or you know, when you have a home birth, and also if you have a water birth. You're less likely to experience a third and fourth degree tear. I don't think it reduces the chances of first and second degree, but it does reduce the chances of serious tears. My question was, what's the process? What happens if you experience a tear? What happens with that person who's experienced a tear afterwards?
Yeah, sure. So after every birth, even if a tear isn't suspected, so you might suspect a tear immediately if there was like a sudden loss of blood, either in the pool or immediately after birth. So as a midwife, you're sort of assessing for that blood loss and establishing where it's coming from. So it's always advised to recommend a perineal inspection. And when I say recommend, it's not something that you should ever be forced into doing or even so rushed into doing it as well. I could tell you a lot of stories about the things that I've seen, but I would say that a lot of women can be rushed into it. It's kind of like a almost like a production line. The baby's out, the placenta's out, and then let's check the perineum, and everything can just become So, what's the word? You know, ticking the box that that task has been done. And of course, you know, you've had babies, Erin, you know how you feel after you've given birth. And sometimes you're just not quite ready. You're just getting over that feeling and that discomfort of giving birth. And then suddenly somebody then wants to start poking around again and inspecting you down below. So it should be unhurried. You should be always ask permission and of course gain consent and explain why it should be recommended to check the perineum. So we're just checking the area for any type of tears. So it's not kind of, you know, looking for the worst type of damage. It's just trying to identify if there has been any trauma there and whether it does need repairing or not.
I think one thing we didn't mention when we were talking about the different types of tears is that there's also clitoral and labial tears and grazes that can happen as well. And I assume you're probably checking for those as well. And what another thing that I think a lot of people don't realise, which is part, I think, of the obstetric and anal sphincter injury guidelines, which hospitals adhere to, is that you can also experience a rectal exam to check for a tear. And I think people don't expect that to happen, having someone stick a finger up your bum after you've given birth. So I think that's also worth mentioning, that that is a possibility that might be offered.
It should be done, like I say, in their own time and explaining and, you know, making them comfortable first of all. Some people find it, you know, helpful if you, I mean, when I inspect perineum, I would always kind of use a warm cloth. So we have like this cloth that's called a gauze. I would always soak that in sort of warm water first of all and rinse down the area just so that you can visually inspect it first of all. And then also just talking her through it, and you know, things like offering Entonox gas and air is really helpful, and sort of, you know, just gently coaching her through the process that you're doing. You know, that I'm going to look from the top to the bottom, and then I'm going to look inside, I'm going to gently part the labia, and I'm going to need to look at the vaginal wall. And it all should be done, you know, with respect, and it should be done really slowly and gently. But unfortunately, I've seen it where it's been rushed and it's unnecessarily harsh. And of course, that's really going to be really, you know, cause a lot of discomfort and pain when a baby's just been born from that area. And then, like you say, as part of that guideline and protocol, it is offered to inspect the anus as well, which is, again, it's not nice. Just given birth, you're feeling very, very tender and bruised. So again, that should be done very slowly and gently. So what you're doing there is you're inserting a finger into the anus, but at the same time you're opening the vagina, looking at the wall of the vagina, and also making sure that there's no anal sphincter that's visible at all. So that's when you would, if they were, that's when you would be able to diagnose a third or fourth degree tear.
So if somebody has experienced a tear, what would be done to rectify that if it needs rectifying?
So it really depends on, again, the classification. So if it was a first degree, and if the edges of that first degree look like that they come together, and depending on the area as well, because if you had a labial tear that was, you know, look quite deep, or whether it's bleeding as well, that's significant, because if it's bleeding, then you might want to recommend some sutures just to stop that bleeding. But again, you would talk the person through it and ask their permission and talk around the benefits of either suturing or not, and talk about actually what's happened, where the trauma is and what's happened. And then it would just be whether it's appropriate for the midwife to suture, or would it need an obstetric doctor to come in and repair. So midwives can repair first and second, and also episiotomies. But then that comes into, you know, your experience and your knowledge, and also your confidence. Like, are you able to do that? Can you look at that tear and think confidently? I'm able to suture that, because there's a huge discrepancy in terms of, you know, training and experience as well.
I think one thing that I think I found quite interesting, which was mentioned to me, is that there's different types of sutures that can be done to fix a tear. And there's lots of research to show that one type of suture actually has better outcomes than the other. So which is the type? Is it continuous or individual stitches that tends to have better outcomes?
The better outcome would be, and what's recommended, is a continuous suturing. However, sometimes it might be that you would do a few interrupted sutures, but that's usually just to a labial tear. So continuous just means that you quite often get asked, how many stitches am I having, or how many have you done? And there's no answer to that really, because it starts from one end and finishes at the other. So it's continuous. So if you would want me to talk through perhaps a second degree, which is really common, particularly in, like Beth said, in a first vaginal birth, you would start off by making sure that the lady is really comfortable, that she's got adequate support, but also access to gas and air pain relief as well. And then you would explain what you're going to do, and again gain consent, and explain that obviously it could take some time. You'd identify where what we call the apex of the wound is, and then you'd start by suturing there. And then, if you can imagine, it's quite difficult to imagine if you've never done it, but what you're doing is that you're bringing the muscle together first, and that you're going through perhaps the perineum muscle, and then you're bringing that together. And then if you can imagine that you come to the skin surface, so if you imagine that you're at the skin surface of the labia, and then quite often with natural tears, you know, there's no straight line, so it can look quite jagged. So it's not going to just split in one straight line, it can be a bit zigzaggy, or kind of what's the word, asymmetrical in some ways. So you're trying to make sure that that comes together the way that it should do, and that it looks anatomically correct as well. And then as you get to the skin surface, then you're bringing it up to the skin surface, then you're finishing it off, and also tying the knot, and make sure the knot is buried as well, that the knot is not visible, because that could be really uncomfortable as well.
So once somebody has had their tear sutured, what does aftercare look like for that? Because obviously we've got a wound which is susceptible to infection, and we want it to heal nice and quickly. So what would you advise for aftercare after a tear?
So immediately after we would finish suturing, again, we would talk about what the repair would look like. And myself, being a bit of an artist, I always like to draw a bit of a diagram. In her, I imagine what that looks like. So I always draw a bit of a diagram and let her know what it looked like. Talk about the aftercare, like you say. But just before that, I would just do one final inspection, just again, considering consent, and also, I was going to say then. Yeah, just do one final inspection, just making sure, again, it looks anatomically correct. And also it's advisable to do another anal inspection to make sure there's no sutures that's gone through to that sphincter. And then I will talk about the aftercare, which is, I'm not sure if Beth's going to talk about that, but it's part of, you know, your suturing, really, that you should give that advice about how to look after it immediately, and then it should continue into long-term recovery. But you would sort of give the advice about keeping the area clean and dry, making sure you wash your hands before you change your pads, and also afterwards, making sure that you drink plenty of fluids, and any signs of infection, making her aware that any increased pain, swelling, any funny odours, smells, or discharge could be a sign of infection. So then you're making sure before she leaves the hospital, she knows how to contact a midwife if she's concerned about any of those things. And then again, it should go on to the community postnatal care as well, making sure those things are followed up in the community.
Then obviously, Beth, we've got you here because you see lots of people that have experienced tears and are probably experiencing problems afterwards. So if somebody has experienced a tear, at what point should they be going and seeing a physio? And why should they go and see a physio?
It's usually recommended, we say, to come for a check at 6 weeks post-vaginal delivery, just to give yourself that a little bit time to stop bleeding. You know, you've got a lot of natural healing within that time as well. It doesn't mean that within that time you shouldn't do anything to your pelvic floor. We do encourage some pelvic floor exercises within that time that will help the blood flow and then the healing of it. But like Abigail said, if you are experiencing any pain or funny smells and things like that, then obviously don't do pelvic floors and go to the doctor. But yeah, we'd normally recommend about 6 weeks, and that is for any sort of grading of tearing or episiotomy. I can't stress enough the importance of coming to get yourself checked, because it's not just only the birth, it's, you know, the pregnancy changes, the strain that the baby's putting on your ligaments and your tissues. So your pelvic floor will be different postnatally, regardless of the tear or an episiotomy.
And what are the most common reasons that people do come to seek out support from a physio? If like, what are the common problems that people are experiencing?
Yeah, I think people are a lot more proactive nowadays rather than reactive. So there's a lot, we all do the mummy MOTs, and I think a lot of education around that in terms of being preventative and not just waiting for the problems. So a lot more people are coming before problems do arise. But you know, you can get sort of things like incontinence problems, prolapse symptoms, sort of like that heaviness, dragging, pain down below, problems with your bowels, struggling to evacuate, lots and lots of different symptoms. But what I also want to touch on as well, just briefly going into back quickly into episiotomies, is that if you do have an episiotomy, the risk of having an avulsion, which is a tear of your pelvic floor muscles from the bone, is doubled. And that increases your risk of having a prolapse, because obviously you're weakening the muscle and you've got a greater space. So again, be proactive, don't be reactive, and just come and get your 6 week checks. I can't stress that enough.
I think lots of us probably don't go and get checked. I mean, I've got to put my hands up and say that I never had any checks after having three kids, and I probably should, and I will now after today. But I think there's a tendency to kind of just struggle on unless you've got real problems, to just go, oh well, it's not that bad, and just kind of plod on with any kind of potential issues. And you're right, a lot of this stuff is probably preventable if we went and saw somebody sooner before it gets really, really bad.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, I see it all the time, even on the adverts, you know, people always are advocating, you know, to wear pads, like, you know, for leaking. And it's terrible, because things like that can be easily prevented. And you know, it is quality of life for a woman, and it's confidence, it's everything. So it is really important to come and get yourself checked, and it's never too late, Erin. You can always it's never too late.
It's something that I joke with my clients, and it's not actually funny, to be honest. But you know, I do have three kids. I've given birth three times, been pregnant three times. That's obviously put stress and strain on my pelvic floor. I've had an episiotomy, and I've had 2 second degree tears. And sometimes, you know, I've got three children making demands of me in different directions, and I need a wee, and I'm like, I'll go in a minute, I'll go in a minute, I'll go in a minute, and then I sneeze, and I'm like, oh damn it, I should have gone to the toilet when I needed to, and I probably should go and get it checked, because it's not, I mean, I'd say, I want to say it's not normal, it's common, but you know, probably is, you know, there's, I'm sure there's something I can do about that.
Yeah, and you're 100% right in saying it's not normal, but it's so common. And I think the world of pelvic health is getting better at advocating for women that, you know, we don't have to put up with things. But yeah, you're 100% right. And I think another thing to stress to all women who are listening is that the menopause all does come to us all. And if you have got a weak pelvic floor, having, you know, any incontinence symptoms, even if you just get it when you're sneezing or you're running, that will progress and can get worse when you hit the menopause. I think a scary statistic is, I think 50% of women over 50 prolapse from not having a good pelvic floor before hitting the menopause. So yeah, so important. Come and see me, Erin.
I definitely need to, because I'm perimenopausal already. I mean, I'm 43, so I should probably get on that quite soon.
Yes, definitely.
So what can someone expect if they feel like that there's potentially something not quite right and they want to go and see a physio? What can they expect from that appointment? What kind of things do you do, and what is it that you can, you know, do to help resolve some of the issues that they're experiencing?
Yeah, of course.
Erin, if you just go back to like what can happen in the postnatal period first. Before they would go to Beth, I just wanted to touch on what I see in the community, and how things can become really bad before they become much better, if you know what I mean. And I think Beth might back me up on that, Beth, that you might see people that, so you know when you were saying that, you know, as women we tend to put our children first and we ignore any sort of symptoms. So sorry to interrupt there, just didn't want to go back from
that.
No,
it's important.
But what I see is that, so it depends on when you would see your community midwife, but, you know, I see more so these days that people are spending a bit more time in hospital. So sometimes by the time that they get out, it might be day 3 or day 5 by the time I'm visiting them for the first time. And what should happen is that you should be offered an inspection at least the day after, as soon as possible, after any sort of repair has been done, so after any sort of suturing, just to check that the sutures are intact and it looks like things are healing and the infection is not present. But what I find is that people, when they are leaving the hospital, they're rushed. They can be discharged by people that are not midwives. So therefore, that check leaving hospital often gets missed. And then when they get home, I very rarely see that women will decline a perineal inspection. And a lot of reasons for that is because they just want to focus on the baby. They want to ignore that things might not be quite right. And also other things like they feel uncomfortable, they feel shy, they think, well, I've been looked at so many times, I don't want to be looked at again. And even things like, it's really common for me, that they might say, well, I've not had a shower today, I've not had a wash, I really would prefer you not to. But then you've got to take into account that I might be seeing them on day 3, someone might not be seeing them till day 10 after that. So me personally, I would always sort of just gently recommend that, you know, it's a really good idea that I have a look today, because if things are not right or if there's a sign of infection, then we can start the treatment straight away. And most, you know, most cases people say, okay, you know, and I'll sort of give them time in between me checking the baby, just they pop upstairs and perhaps have a little wash and get themselves ready, and then I'll inspect it again at home. But what I do know is that not all midwives do that. And some will say things like, would you like me to check you today? And if they say no, then that's the end of the story. Or, you know, if they decline, then they'll just say, oh, well, make sure someone checks it next time. But like I said, you know, within 7 days, something could really sort of manifest in that time. And in the worst cases, I've seen some really, really horrific wounds that are breaking down, and I mean really catastrophic, and then you get to the point where you're in a really difficult situation. It's very painful, it's very difficult to heal, like we talked about episiotomies. You know, much more difficult to heal anyway. But then if you've got a broken down wound, and then if you can imagine you're caring for your baby, trying to breastfeed, and you're in this extreme pain, quite often women in that situation, I can tell by as soon as I've entered the room that the way that they're moving around, I can tell there's an infection there. And then on top of that, you'll have unpleasant symptoms like really bad odour as well, because it's technically the flesh is breaking down. So when that's suspected, you know, you really need to contact someone straight away if you suspect that something's not quite right. You need to request a midwife visit and get somebody out to check that. And then the other side of that is that the training, again, lack of knowledge, lack of experience. Some midwives, especially for junior, they might not know how to start that first line of treatment. So, you know, that's another story in itself. But usually it's taking a swab of the wound. If there's any sutures that are coming out, then we need to remove them sutures, try and clean the area as best that we can. And then we use different sorts of material, and that probably differs from trust to trust. We should get antibiotics on that day. It's like urgent, which would be a broad spectrum. And then you would wait for the swab results to come back. And then you would start sort of checking the wound every day then, and making sure that the wound is starting to heal and come to the surface. So, and then I would imagine weeks later, Beth might see the longer term sort of recovery from wounds breaking down. But I just wanted to stress that, because it's really significant if that.
Yeah. Thank you. But thank you for adding that, because I think lots of people probably don't know the signs to be looking out for with a wound that maybe is deteriorating. And you're right, leaving it until day 10 is a really, really long time to get something checked if there is an issue.
It's such a difficult place as well for a wound, because obviously, you know, we urinate and we open our bowels, and it's really hard to keep clean. It's a moist, damp environment. You've got a baby to look after, but imagine trying to care for a wound that's breaking down in that area as well. Mm. It's devastating.
Mm. So going back to Beth, to if somebody is coming to see you, whether that's earlier on or later on, what can they expect from an appointment, and what kind of things do you suggest and can you do to help them?
Yeah, so usually the appointments are about 60 minutes, maybe a bit longer, like 90 minutes, just depends on what's required really. But the whole sort of subjective and objective is all around like a holistic approach for mums. So I think sometimes mums just expect to come in and just lie on the bed, you know, pelvic floor checked, and it's not like that at all. So we'll be chatting for like the first 15-20 minutes, and that's just to know all about what mum was like pre-baby, when she was pregnant, and then postnatally, like if they've got any symptoms or concerns. So yeah, we then assess them from a functional point of view, so that sometimes the pelvic floor gets blamed for a lot. For example, incontinence, and sometimes a woman could have an amazing pelvic floor and it's not just the pelvic floor that's letting them down. So we'd have a look at how the hips are moving, the back and the pelvis and the tummies, because obviously diastasis is quite common in postnatally for some mums. We'd have a chat about the lifestyle. So that would be about what kind of support they've got at home. Are they off on maternity leave? Are they going to have to go back anytime soon? And sort of as well, a really key thing to talk about is about the baby wearing, especially if I'm worried about someone's pelvic floor. Asking about that in terms of trying to limit that throughout the day is important as well. And then we talk about the bladder and the bowels in terms of their function, any incontinence. And a really important one for bowels is to not be constipated postnatally, which I know most people are, because they're scared to poo, the diet changes, the routine's changed. But to try and optimize that is really important, because you don't want any unnecessary straining on a pelvic floor that has just been strained for 9 months and then also birth vaginally. So it's really important that we do try and optimize those bowels as much as we can. And then another key thing is, I thought I'd touch on, is nutrition. Because if there is pelvic floor weakness, then we need to make sure that you're getting enough protein and fiber to try and build their muscles up. And also about some touch on supplements in terms of collagen and things like that, just to look after mum and as much as possible. So yeah, we would chat a lot first, we'd do an assessment, and then yeah, we would finish with the pelvic floor assessment, which is an internal assessment, but there's no equipment used at all. It's nothing like a smear. And if it is ever uncomfortable, then I would not go ahead. We can actually do quite a lot from the outside externally. So yeah, it's all very comfortable and very relaxed for mums.
And apart from, say, incontinence, what other things can people experience? What other kind of problems do people come and see you about?
Yeah, so a large variety of problems. So you can have suddenly painful sex following childbirth that they've not had before. They can also have like heaviness, tampon feeling down there, which sometimes isn't a prolapse, and it can be from like the tightness in the episiotomy. It can just be a tight pelvic floor, or it can actually be because the tissues are really dry from breastfeeding. But if you do have any of these symptoms, then obviously you do need to come and see a pelvic floor physio, because if it is a prolapse, you know, there's things we can do about that.
Do you want to just talk a little bit about what a prolapse is? Because lots of people that are listening might not know what a prolapse is.
Yeah, so there's lots of certain different degrees of prolapses, but a prolapse is when you've lost support within the pelvic organs. So that could be your bladder is descending into the vaginal canal, your uterus is descending, or the rectum is descending, or you can have like multiple descents within the vagina. But one thing I will say, in particular for my early postnatal mums, is that I never diagnose a prolapse. Because, you know, the body's still really early recovering at that phase. If you're breastfeeding, your estrogen's low, so your tissues are more floppy. So I would always just say descent or laxity, because we shouldn't really be diagnosing unless they're 12 months postpartum. But yeah, that descent, it can be quite traumatic for mums, but there's actually loads we can do. And I think you can get some spontaneous recovery, but if that is guided the right way by physios, with certain pelvic floor, lifestyle changes, nutrition, everything that we touched on before, you can get some really, really positive results.
And sorry, I interrupted you. What are the other things that people might come and see you about, issues that they're experiencing?
Yeah, and bowel issues as well is really important. And these tend to happen more with your type 3 and 4 tears. And I had a lady actually, just thinking about what you were saying, Abigail, in terms of like experience and, you know, if they're seeing other professionals. I had a lady come to me with a type grade 3 tear. And she, when you have a grade 3 tear and a grade 4, you refer to the perineal clinic in the NHS. And she'd had a referral, and it was a phone call. And it was a physio who'd made the phone call, and she basically just asked, how are you doing? Is everything okay? And this lady responded saying, yes, she's fine. Luckily, this lady had already booked a mummy MOT to come see me at 6 weeks. And when I asked her more questions other than, you know, how are you feeling? Are you okay? You're fine, in terms of, are you able to hold in wind? Have you got any fecal staining? She was like, yes, yes, yes. So there is still problems there. So I think really important to stress that if you do have a grade 3 or 4, you know, do go and get yourselves checked. I know it's obviously, you know, sometimes people don't want to be checked again. They've had so many checks during the delivery and pregnancy, but it is really important for your recovery.
I'd just like to add with midwives as well, Beth, you know, since meeting Beth, I've learned so much, and, you know, I've done further reading myself, because it's an area that I'm really keen on, and I know like you, Erin, I had an episiotomy with my first, and that recovery, it was really unpleasant. And, you know, I always think about it, you know, when I was in that situation. And, you know, the thing is with midwives, our training is very limited, and people don't realise that, you know, even in terms of giving advice about pelvic floor. You know, as a midwife, when you've been a midwife a long time like me, you hear what other people are saying, and the information's either incorrect or, you know, very, very brief. And, you know, I will always ask women, do you know what your pelvic floor is? Do you know the function of it? Do you know where it is even? Some women don't even know where it is. And then, of course, you've got all the other, complexities. Know a language barrier and things like that. There's been so many times that women have told me that they've been in contact with the first baby, and I mean, since meeting Beth, I just refer everyone to Beth. So I think when I'm on probably gets a lot of followers on Instagram. It's such a huge subject that midwives are only experienced in if they, you know, if they take a keen interest. And also when Beth said about perineal clinics, I'm not sure how uniform they are across trusts, but in the trust that I worked at, we were actually really fortunate there because they have a perineal clinic that's been running for a very long time, and they've got experienced midwives. So anyone that has a third degree or any kind of wound breakdown whatsoever will be referred to that clinic, and it's really holistic because it is midwives instead of just an NHS physio, and then they will follow treatment up from there, and then they'll work with the physios as well. But I'm not sure that that's pretty uniform across the NHS.
I don't think it is. I think it is a bit of a postcode lottery. Mm-hmm. One of my clients in my hypnobirthing group this month, she was saying that she had a third degree tear, and she had really good care postnatally, and she was instantly referred to a clinic, and had follow-ups afterwards and had lots of treatment. And her friend, who gave birth roughly the same time but in a different area, also experienced a third degree tear and had no support afterwards whatsoever. And she was like, well, you should be doing this, and you should be seeing this person, and you should be getting this support, and she wasn't getting any of it. So I think it's important that if people have experienced a tear, that they realise that they may not get the support immediately from the NHS, and that if they're not getting support, that they should go and seek support.
And I think as a midwife as well, I mean, what I've learned over time is that, you know, we say goodbye to you quite early. I mean, it used to be 28 days and then it went to 14. And now, like I said, sometimes it's 10 days when you're discharged from a midwife. But long term, in the very worst cases that we don't talk about, and we should, because there are women out there that have life-changing injuries from birth, and because it wasn't dealt with in the recovery stage as well, it can significantly impact on the quality of life. And I'm not sure if Beth has met anyone like that, but I have. And, you know, I think we definitely need to talk about it more.
Yeah,
100%. And just on that, is that is just perfectly fits into what I was saying before in terms of seeing someone, you know, within that first 12 months can prevent, you know, a lot of future problems, because you've got that spontaneous recovery of your body healing. So if you've just got that guidance in terms of what you need to do following your exercise, lifestyle, bladder, bowels, nutrition, support at home, you know, you're really setting yourself up for not only a quality recovery, but a really good, you know, quality of life.
Yeah. It can be life changing, can't it? In a very negative way, if we're suffering with issues with our pelvic floor. So this is why I thought this, you know, I really appreciated you both proactively suggesting recording this episode, because I think hopefully it's been really informative and helpful for anybody who is either pregnant or has given birth and actually has now thought, oh, actually, maybe maybe what I'm experiencing isn't normal and actually maybe I can seek support. If anybody wants to ask you any questions after they've listened to this, or they want to find you online, where can they find you? Beth, where can they find you online?
Yeah, so mine's really easy. So if you just, you can Google my website at themumphysio.co.uk, or on Instagram at themumphysio, or on Facebook at themumphysio. So dead easy. Or you can even email me at beth@themumphysio.co.uk.
Fantastic. And Abigail, where can people find you?
Well, I mainly live on Instagram. I do have a Facebook account, but I don't really visit that too often. But on my Instagram, it's maternal_matters. And in my bio, you'll find all my links to my website and email on there.
And everyone needs to give you a follow, just even if just to see all the amazing artwork you do. I'm so jealous of all the amazing artwork that you get to do in all of the places that you go and do all your murals, which I absolutely love. But thank you both so much for your time today. And I was saying before we started recording, I think we could do a whole nother episode on what causes tears and how to prevent them. So maybe that's something for another day. But hopefully everyone's found this really useful. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
The Better Birth podcast and all of its content is for educational and informational purposes only. You should consult your midwife or your doctor for anything in relation to your own pregnancy and birth. The opinions and the views of the guests on the Better Birth podcast are their own opinions and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Better Birth or Erin Fung.